Our gospel reading is taken from chapter 9 of John's gospel. And as I said earlier, this is a story about the blind man being cured. And listen for the various responses to the action of God for the blind man. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's work might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for night is coming when no one can work at all. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam." And then he went and washed and came back able to see. Now the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some were saying, "It is he." Others were saying, "No, but it is someone like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." But they kept asking him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made mud and spread it on my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' And then I went and washed and received my sight." They said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I do not know." They brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. And then the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight. He said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and then I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?" And they were divided. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened." And he said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been blind, and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it is that he now sees. Nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind, and they said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered, "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." And they said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." And the man answered, "Here is an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worship him and obeys him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And they answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and you are trying to teach us." And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he answered, "And who is he that I may see? Tell me so that I may believe." And Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "I came into this world for judgment so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind." Some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not blind, are we?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have sin. But now you say, 'We see,' and so your sin remains." Gospel of the Lord. A very long, convoluted story. And yet, as I suggested at the beginning, there are various forms of blindness. And I think what the gospel may be pointing out is there are different reactions, are there not, to the blindness of our own lives. We hear the parents defending themselves lest they be put into trouble. We hear the Pharisees justifying their existence with their own ideology that says there are certain things that God will do and certain things that God will not do, and therefore we declare this is not of God, and therefore this is nonsense, and this man is not a prophet, he is nobody. He is not from God, we know better. And then you have the reaction of the blind man who goes from recognizing Jesus as a healer and then coming to recognize him as a prophet, and then ultimately confessing him to be the Son of Man, which is a progression in faith. And Jesus' response in all of this very basically is about blindness. We are all blind, are we not? I came into the world that those who do not see will begin to see, and those who, and I paraphrase, who think they do see will become blind. Because what he is going to reveal, they will never be able to see because of their own choices, their own blindness. It's a simple story, but at the same time, I think it offered me a lot of reflection, because there are many times in my life where I have found myself blind. I'm humbled when I think back to early years when I was really young and stupid and innocent. I call it innocent / stupid, because it's a good mixture of both. Innocence makes me feel better. Stupid is probably the reality. But, you know, doing things out of where you come from sometimes puts you in a situation where unknowingly you really create problems for other people. Now, I never got up in the morning and said, "Excuse me, I'm going to get up this morning, and today I'm going to see how many lives I can wreck." I don't think anybody except a sociopath would get up and do that. Most of us consciously get up and we try to live our lives the best way we know how. And it's only in retrospect, when we reflect on our lives, when we have an opportunity to look back perhaps and assess because of what we have experienced ourselves, we look back and judge perhaps what we did before. And what we did before sometimes is embarrassing. It may be at least humbling, and in some ways makes us very much aware of our own imperfection and our own inability to really be the people we thought we were. At least that's my experience. And there are times when I have chosen not to recognize and see the reality around me. There's a whole period of time when I was a kind of an activist person, and I was very social conscious, and I had all kinds of causes. I wore a breastplate practically with all the causes I was fighting, and everything I did was filtered through that. Even my theology studies kind of fed into that. because I would hear the gospel and I would say, well, of course, that ties in beautifully with what I'm trying to do with poverty. Or that ties in beautifully with my inability to accept the wars that go on constantly in the human race. And that whole kind of ideology I set up for myself, which set me up in lots of ways not to hear reality, not to hear what really was going on. Because I was so focused on one way that the other ways did not exist. And so, in effect, I chose blindness and made this my comfort zone and missed out on an awful lot of the details that might have changed or at least caused some variation and some flexibility in my inflexible attitude towards some of these things. Which, these are not just things, all these things involve people. And so on the one hand, I'm trying to be a Christian person. On the other hand, I've chosen so many ways of not being very Christian at all. So I fed right into the Pharisees. And then there are times when, like parents, like the parents in the story, I have kind of backed off and said, whoa, I'm not going to touch that one because I do not want to make a commitment, because if I tell the truth, I may find myself on the outside of a relationship. I may find myself up against the institutional church. I may find myself sanctioned from the pulpit. All these nasty things that we could line up as punishments, because fear will do wonderful things to ideologies. Fear makes us very much aware of how really weak and how really unable we are to grasp so full a picture that we know the absolute truth. And when confronted with a bit more of the truth, or a different version of the truth, or a different perspective on the truth, fear comes in, lest I be discovered as inadequate, not thinking very well, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, the brightest light in the chandelier, or just out of your mind. And then we have the possibility of a blindness that makes us aware of a truth about ourselves. Many of us go through life without reflecting, go through life with an attitude that I am who I am, and that's the best I can be, and that is all I am. The sad part about that, brothers and sisters, is no one of us has ever been so fully ourselves and celebrated for who we really are that the person that we live most times is a person partially created by the world in which we grew up, or the world of the authorities of our lives, or the world that fashioned us by our experiences, by our hurts, by our inabilities, by all those things that are the variables of life. And so the people we may be may not be the person that we are. And I think, as our readings have been this week, I think this morning's reading too, especially talks about the importance about moving away from being everything we thought we had to be to being our real true selves. And so the story about blindness is something that I think we can all bring home and reflect on. But I want to go one step further into what we have been talking about through the Lenten season with the readings from Nouwen, from Henry Nouwen, and the Rembrandt picture. Now, we've talked a little bit about the son, obviously the prodigal son, and our identification with the prodigal son and the dynamic of his feeling lost and coming home. We've talked a little bit about the elder son, who stands there just looking at the father and the son with hands closed and observing what's going on and knowing that he is filled with resentments and angers that allow him to not get involved in welcoming his brother back, and not even going along with the father's plea, but standing back and holding firm to his own lostness, if you will, in the relationship with his dad. But what about the father? The father in the picture, in the portrait there, is an extremely central person. If you look at the light, and Steve said, you know, you got to come in here at night when it's dark and just this light is on, and this picture really kind of pops out at you. You can see the Father embracing the Son. But the Father is a very central part of Rembrandt's journey. One of the things that Nouwen does in this particular volume about this painting is he goes into detail about Rembrandt's journey. He called this the return of the prodigal son because in his own life, Rembrandt was trying to find his way back home. He was trying as a person of faith to find where he really belonged. And you see through all of his life as paintings go on, he paints a lot of portraits and he paints a lot of people. And many times he paints himself into the picture. He becomes a person, a young person in a brothel. He's painted himself as another person very much involved in doing good things for people. You find his face in various places. Nouwen points out that this was one of Rembrandt's last paintings. And to understand the impact of this painting, we need just a little bit to remind ourselves of what his journey was like. He was a very famous artist in his day. But as years went on, and as his life continued, and he aged to the ripe old age of the 60s, imagine, his paintings became less and less interesting to the public. And so his security was being lost. And as he was aging, he started to realize that, and you see it in his paintings, he no longer was painting people, excuse me, of power. Excuse me one second. No, they're not there. He was no longer painting people of power in situations where people were in control of things, but more and more he was painting old people. And the old people all had a sense not only of inner strength, but of weaknesses, of human failing. People that had suffered through many things, and he himself suffered a great deal in his life. And he starts to put in people's faces what he himself had experienced. Now, as a man aging, he had lost his wife, 3 sons had died, 2 daughters had died, as well as 2 women who had supported his work and had befriended him, they also had died. And at the time that he painted this picture, he had a very different outlook on life. And instead of looking at the exterior of the world, he had now become an old man. And an old man who now appreciated the interior life. And so you see here in the painting, not Luke's version, and if you read Luke's story, isn't the father standing up on a hill looking out, waiting for the son to come back? And he sees him afar off and runs out to greet him and puts his arms around him, etc. What you have here in this portrait is Rembrandt standing there as a broken man, half blind, suffered through so many of life's tragedies, but a man who has strength that is seen in the way the Father sees the Son coming back. The Son ragged, in barely little clothes, barefoot, dirty, hair shorn, broken, and the Father, his hands, very, very strong, reaching down and embracing him over his shoulders, pulling him into himself. Rembrandt is seeing, and the Father is seeing the Son not with regular eyes, but Nouwen suggests he's seeing his Son from the inner eye of his heart. And that inner eye can see far and away. That inner eye, the eye of God, can see all people. And the embrace of the Father in compassion, in forgiveness, not in judgment, not in scorn, not in demanding explanation, not in having failed. The Father reaches the Son and embraces him as he has always been. Loved eternally, compassionately, and always celebrated for who he was and who he is. And so for Rembrandt, this Father truly is God. And Rembrandt has found his way home. It's a homecoming not of the Son. It is a homecoming of Rembrandt, who has finally accepted his original blessing, that he was and always will be embraced by the compassionate love of the Father. Brothers and sisters, maybe it will take each one of us a lifetime, like the sufferings of Rembrandt and the trials of our own lives, to finally become vulnerable enough that we will recognize and come home to the truth that God, Father, Mother, has always loved us, will always love us, is there with compassion and mercy and forgiveness always, and never, never, never condemning, judging, or somehow holding us accountable. As we heard in our last week's readings, isn't that almost the opposite of what we grew up with? Isn't the God we have feared most of our lives the one who waits to judge? If we move into the place of our original blessing, which baptism invites us to do, now we are freed of the sins of Adam, theologically. We are back to our original blessing. If we move into that place and begin to live the day with the knowledge and the experience that we are held in both old, frail, yet strong hands and arms of a God who created us and who has never, ever not held us. Then, brothers and sisters, I believe we will understand not only the gospel, but we will begin to see what we have never seen before. And as Jesus said, those who are blind will see, and those who think they see will be blind. I know it's hard to accept, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we could? Amen.